Well, that was underwhelming, wasn't it? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Riznall. It is Friday today, the 7th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. I mean, what do you say, right? Guesses were at 1 million jobs added to the economy last month. We got 266,000. The unemployment rate went up. So let's discuss, shall we? Neela Richardson is at ADP. Heather Long is at The Washington Post. Hey, you two.
Hi, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, Neela, let me start with you and ask you straight up, does this report mean we have to rethink how we're thinking about this recovery?
Yes. I think that the consensus was that we would just see million job months for the next several months. And now we see that the path ahead is just going to be more bumpy. It's bumpier than expected, and we can expect a bit of volatility in the month-to-month numbers. That doesn't mean that the recovery isn't underway. It's just not going to be a straight line, smooth curve from path to finish, start to finish. So that's something that we have to reconsider.
And because the bottom of this thing, Heather, was really, really low. I do want to ask you, Heather, about why you think this happened, and also about what Secretary Yellen said today in the White House briefing room in response to a question about unemployment benefits having possibly put the kibosh on people looking for jobs. What do you think?
I think there's two plausible explanations for what went on here. Number one is the way Wall Street's reading it, which is this is just a blip. You know, it happens from time to time that months are come in very high or very, very low, partly because of these weird seasonal adjustment quirks that can sometimes throw the numbers off. And that's why you saw stocks still go up today, despite something that should have looked like a bit of a warning. But I think the bigger and deeper issue here is there's still a lot of hesitancy to go back to work. There's hesitancy because do people feel safe enough? They're not vaccinated yet. There's hesitancy because of the childcare issues and a lot of schools not being fully up to speed yet and fully back in person. And there's also a lot of hesitancy psychologically. We've just been through this really harrowing year. And a lot of people, like I was just on the phone with a couple in Michigan, and they used to work at a big box retailer. And they're like, look, I don't just want to go racing back to that $15 an hour job. You know, my whole life changed in the past year. I'm looking for something where I'm more respected at work and where I want to do something more meaningful. And so I think there's this big reassessment going on about when people want to go back to work and what kind of jobs they're willing to do for the same pay.
Neela, I do want to ask about why the guesses were so off. And we have to point out here that in your professional capacity, when you're not with us every couple of Fridays, you are the chief economist at ADP, which is the private payroll processor. And all y'all came out this week and said, we think the economy added 742,000 jobs last month. Where's the disconnect?
The disconnect is with the service sector. We were all kind of spot on with leisure and hospitality outperforming. This sector has the most to gain from the safe reopening of the U.S. economy. It was the hardest hit by the pandemic, and we did see gains in that sector, not quite as much as everyone expected, but strong gains, and that was consistent with our numbers earlier in the week and the jobs report. What was missed is the loss in jobs in sectors and areas of the labor market that had been doing well, like grocery store retailers. Mm-hmm. Grocery stores, remember, we were all going to the grocery store. Couriers and messengers, temp services, those all went down, and manufacturing hit hard by the semiconductor shortage in the auto industry, that went down. So sectors that had been outperforming actually lost jobs. That was what was missed, not the leisure and hospitality sector that everyone was so confident would regain its footing and actually did.
Heather, with the caveat that there's a lot that goes into inflation in this economy, one of the biggies is wage inflation, rising wages. And I wonder now, with still 8 million people or so fewer of them having jobs than did at the beginning of this thing, can we maybe stop talking about, oh, my goodness, inflation is coming for at least another month until the May report comes out?
Well, there's not overwhelming signs of any inflation problem, but I do think one of the more interesting numbers in the report today is there actually, if you dig down, that leisure and hospitality sector did see some increase in wages. The average wage in that sector is up about a dollar from pre-pandemic levels. Now, that's still pretty low. It's still under $18, just under 18, but it's starting to rise. And I think the question and the expectation is it will continue to rise over the summer as the sector tries to lure people back. And you're already seeing some companies paying bonuses, signing bonuses for waiter and waitress type jobs. So I'd say this is like one of those green shoot scenarios. There's some evidence that we're seeing a little bit of inflation, but nothing that looks runaway yet.
That's so funny. We haven't heard green shoots in a long time. Hey, Neela, I wonder if, you know, along with this report being, you know, a thing that makes us rethink the recovery. The answer here is that corner that we thought we were turning and we really felt good about a month ago, that corner is now just farther away, right?
I think we still have turned that corner. We've just decelerated a little bit in terms of the speed of the path forward. You know, the best thing about this jobs report, ironically, was that the unemployment rate went up. Because what that meant is that about 400,000 people came back in the labor market looking for new opportunities. That is a good sign, not only of the behavioral confidence that Heather was alluding to, that people are starting to feel a bit more secure and going back to work, but it's also a sign that maybe there are wages that are enticing people back into the labor market. So we should see that as a healthy sign of an increase in labor market participation. Right. But it also says that there is some structural issues at play here. The economy has changed a bit from where it was last year, and we can't expect everything to go back the way it was before the pandemic.
Heather, real quick, would you be at all surprised if next month we are talking a million jobs? I mean, this data is noisy, right?
That's still the expectation, whether it's May or June, that we'll have a couple of million gain months. To me, the key thing is, when are we going to get women back? It was hugely disappointing to see that all the job gains in April went to men, and we actually lost 64,000 women again in the labor force. This is still a key issue.
That is the key point. The key point, honestly. Heather Long at the Washington Post. Neela Richardson, she's at ADP. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Kai.
On Wall Street today, as Heather alluded to, you know what traders like more than a great jobs report? They like an underwhelming jobs report. I'm not saying any of this makes sense. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so here's another part of why that jobs report this morning was so surprising. This economy, as Neela and Heather alluded to, does kind of have a lot going for it right now. Trillions of dollars in relief payments, aid for small businesses as well, state and local governments. The Fed is literally, to quote Jay Powell here, not even talking about raising interest rates. And we're gaining ground against the pandemic. So if you really need to create jobs, which we still do, down 8 million from the before times as we are, what do you do now? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that one.
Not everyone thought job growth was going gangbusters in April. Dave Gilbertson at payroll processor UKG, which is a marketplace underwriter, told me last week he wasn't seeing any big uptick. He says the reason's not complicated.
I think it's human life is impeding the full recovery here, right? People have adjusted. They've adjusted their childcare options. They've adjusted their schedules. They've adjusted their lifestyle. We should start to see a lot more job growth come September, because that's the turn of the new school calendar.
Another thing that'll change in the fall, $300 a week federal pandemic jobless benefits run out. Dean Baker at the Center for Economic and Policy Research says that money could be keeping some service workers from taking low-wage jobs right now.
People working for $10 an hour or less, you're getting more money not working than working. Most people, I think, want to work, and they also know that the benefits expire. So end of August, you're out of luck.
And there's the pandemic, still with us and worrying us. John Lear at Morning Consult says it's actually people who are so far refusing to get vaccinated who are holding back the economic rebound the most. Lear says one key to recovery,
finding a way to convince folks who are vaccine holdouts or vaccine hesitant to get vaccinated.
Finally, this global pandemic thing is uncharted territory, says Daniel Zhao at Glassdoor.
I think economists have been repeatedly humbled through this crisis. We just don't have a good historical reference point to predict how the economy is going to recover.
Zhao is confident we will arrive at full recovery, but the ride may be long and bumpy. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Janet Yellen said today full employment by next year. So we'll see. There are a couple of four-letter words that are appropriate when talking about this economy right now. Jobs is one. We kind of talk about that all the time, J-O-B-S. Here's another one, though. R-I-S-K, risk. The Federal Reserve was out with its semi-annual report on financial stability this week, and things are stable. The economy's mostly doing all right. Vaccines are getting out there. But there is that four-letter word the Fed's keeping in mind. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more on that.
The first risk, the Fed says, is asset prices, soaring asset prices, especially in the stock market. This can be a sign that investors are feeling confident. But Tim Dewey, chief economist at SGH Macro Advisors, says the Fed knows what can happen when prices get too high.
And the concern there is that suddenly those asset prices could drop.
This gets us to the Fed's second risk, financial firms that make bets on stocks using borrowed money. Karen Petru is managing partner at Federal Financial Analytics.
The more debt they have in relation to their capacity to repay it, the less it takes to throw them into the ditch.
The Fed mentions a hedge fund called Archegos Capital Management. It made big bets on stocks, using money it borrowed from banks. And this year, it went bust after some of its bets went bad. Petru says this was just one small hedge fund, but
even relatively small, tiny ones can leave big, big holes in big banks. And that sobered up the Fed.
The Fed's also keeping an eye on individual borrowers. Economist Shannon Seary at Wells Fargo says that includes people with mortgages and forbearance programs.
We could see some strain in particular households as some of these payments come due.
Overall, the report says households are in better shape. But job losses were concentrated among lower wage workers and minorities. Many of those households are still vulnerable. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
There's all kinds of good detail in the monthly jobs report if you take the time to plow through it. The courier and messenger industry, as Neil was mentioning, I loved this one. It was down 77,000 jobs in April. Where are all the couriers and messengers going? Warehouse employment down 4,300. Construction was flat, didn't gain, didn't lose. But overall, we are still down about 200,000 construction jobs from where we were before this pandemic hit. Rocio Montano, she is one of the 10 people we have been following for our series about the American labor force. It's called The United States of Work. Rocio has one of those construction jobs. She's a carpentry apprentice at a big commercial construction company here in Los Angeles, and she sent us this update.
I'm currently in Beverly Hills. We're doing some condos. I'm doing ceilings now, so it's something I didn't really get to do in downtown, and everything has to be nice because of the cost of the condos will be. It's kind of like a high quality project. So we have to be very detailed in what we do and how we do it. And I went back to take some additional classes to kind of like the project management area. I felt like COVID was a really time where I actually thought about what I actually want to do with the career. And since working in the field is going to be very tough for like 30 years, I thought that I'd have something as a backup. So I started intro to project management. I have done some building materials. I'm currently finishing up construction ethics. It's been kind of costly, and I feel like COVID has actually helped with that because there's nowhere else to spend. But it's been it's been pretty interesting taking the class and then kind of going to work and seeing and thinking about what the actual project managers go through while we're building.
coming up.
I enjoyed it.
Sounds like you did. But first, let's do the numbers. A trifecta of increases on this Friday. Dow Industrials climbed 229 points, 2/3%, 34,777. That's a record high. NASDAQ up 119 points, 0.8%, 13,752. The S&P 500 gained almost 31 points, 0.75%, 4,232. For the week, the 5 days gone by, the Dow added 2.6%, ending, as I said, at a record high. The NASDAQ shed 1.5%. S&P 500 up 1.2%. Talked earlier about employment. Talked a lot about employment. Taking a look at those companies that post jobs. Recruit Holdings Company, which owns Indeed and Glassdoor, stepped up 1.2% today. Temp staffing company Robert Half gained 0.7%. $21.6 billion. That is the amount of money the Treasury Department allocated today in emergency rental assistance to help prevent evictions. There was that big court ruling, which was also stayed earlier this week. The money would be offered directly to renters when landlords will not accept direct payments. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Despite that underwhelming jobs report, there are places that are hiring, especially places in Texas, which, according to Governor Greg Abbott, has been open for business, his words, since early March. The problem is that, as we've been reporting, the workforce isn't necessarily there, and the competition to fill jobs, especially in restaurants and in hospitality in general, is fierce. Marketplace's Andy Euler made some calls today.
Let's start with the good news for people like Mark McGuire, managing partner of McGuire's restaurant in North Dallas.
You know, there seems to be a pent-up demand, and we are seeing a higher volume of people coming out.
The bad news?
I need every single position. I need hostesses, food runners, bussers, servers, bartenders, dishwashers, and cooks. I need everything.
Problem is, he says, so does just about every other restaurant in town.
There are banners on buildings right up the tollway from me that are saying $1,000 signing bonus for servers and cooks.
About 91% of a restaurant's report openings they can't fill.
That's Emily Williams Knight with the Texas Restaurant Association. She says back in 2019, 1.3 million people worked in bars and restaurants in Texas.
When the pandemic first hit, that first 6 weeks, we did lose some of that workforce. They went off to other, you know, logistics, grocery, et cetera.
And many of them are just done with the service industry. Restaurant workers have been among the most at-risk population for getting COVID-19. Some of that workforce died. Williams Knight says now that things are opening back up, restaurants must compete with a whole host of other industries for workers. Construction, retail, manufacturing. And, she says, compete with unemployment benefits.
The incentives, we believe, just aren't aligned in the right way to get people back out there.
But many say the onus is on restaurant owners to make jobs more desirable by offering health care and retirement options. And that would likely mean they'd have to pass the cost on to customers. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
There you are on a Monday morning, wondering what the business and economic news is to start the week. Here's your answer. The Marketplace Morning Report. David Brancaccio and the gang telling you everything you need to know. Infrastructure is the big picture economic idea right now, in no small part because the Biden administration is pushing hard on its infrastructure plan. Trillions of dollars, as you've heard, for the green economy, the tech economy, the care economy, but also the just plain old infrastructure economy, including $111 billion in water. A lot of the attention that water infrastructure gets is about leaky pipes or toxic pipes or worse, in a lot of big cities. But in some places, places that are closer to home than you might think, the needs are a bit more basic, as Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports.
Jonathan Young is at work at the Chick-fil-A restaurant he manages in Waldorf, Maryland, on a Sunday when it's usually closed. Young and about a half dozen other volunteers fill two big pickup trucks, the Chick-fil-A catering van, and a few cars with six packs of gallon jugs of water, paid for by employees of the fast food restaurant.
Today we're going to be delivering about 600 gallons of water.
to the rural community of Nanjemoy, Maryland. They make the 40-minute trip about once a month.
The first time that the water delivery happened, our point of contact in Nanjemoy, who was helping us deliver the water, kept getting phone calls and people were asking him, "Hey, I saw you guys leaving water. Do you have any for us?" And we only had 150 gallons that time, so he said no.
There are more than 70 families in Nanjemoy who don't have potable water coming into their homes, according to Lifestyles of Maryland, the local nonprofit that organizes these volunteer visits. Nanjemoy is less than 40 miles from the nation's capital, and its residents are not alone in this situation.
There are 2 million Americans living without running water and basic indoor plumbing, and many more without sanitation.
Sarah Amanzada is with the U.S. Water Alliance.
And it's largely an invisible crisis. Low-income people, they're people in rural areas, they're people of color.
Which describes the residents of this part of Nanjemoy, Maryland, to a T. Drive down the narrow dirt roads, partially washed out by recent rains, and you'll find clusters of trailer homes. Some have wells, but often the water isn't drinkable.
And we've been able to put 4 porta potties and 4 hand washing stations out.
Tammy Gaussman is the volunteer coordinator for Lifestyles of Maryland.
And as soon as we did that, we got a bunch more families that came forward in need.
Like the Dyson family, who live in a 2-bedroom trailer home. Torinda, her husband, their daughter, and 3 grandchildren. Before the porta potty, Torinda Dyson says they had a pot in the house that she or another family member would clean out twice a day. She stopped using their outhouse a couple of years ago, worried about snakes in the woods. Dyson likes the privacy of the new setup.
I enjoyed it. I've come out here with my phone, be sitting up.
She has a well, but its water gets muddy on windy, rainy days like this one. Now the family has a hand-washing station, plus the deliveries of bottled water, which they use for drinking and cooking and baths. They heat up the clean water on the oil stove or in the microwave, and each morning, everyone takes turns, starting with her daughter.
And then when she takes the kids out to the road, I take my bath.
And Dyson is used to this version of normal. She takes pride in the fact that she and her family who live in the area take care of each other and make do with what they have.
It really don't bother me because I've been doing it so long.
A lack of potable water isn't the only infrastructure problem in this part of Nanjemoy. Several areas don't have paved roads, garbage pickup, or streetlights. Local historian Tarawana Renee Keyes says it's all a legacy of generations of poverty.
The people who are living adjacent to the plantations in which our family members toil on as slaves.
Just minutes away, there are sprawling estates with more comfortable homes. Those residents pay to install septic systems, better wells, and other services. Volunteer Jonathan Young says delivering water to Nanjemoy has opened his eyes.
You want to talk about like wealth gaps within like a small community. I mean, Nanjemoy, there are some very, you know, middle, upper class people who live in Nanjemoy. So it's not like the whole place is without water.
Young says he wants lawmakers negotiating over infrastructure an hour away in the nation's capital to keep in mind their neighbors who lack basic infrastructure. In Nanjemoy, Maryland, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, Van Morrison's got a new album out. You might have heard of that. The reviews are not kind, and fine, to each their own, but this song? Come on.
Why are you on Facebook? Why do you need secondhand friends? Why do you really care who's trending? Or is there something you're defending? Get a life. Is it that?
Come on, why are you on Facebook? Too good. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context on a Friday. It is firmly in keeping with the policy of this program that if we stop talking about this stuff, we are going to stop talking about it. Overall unemployment, as we said earlier, up a tenth to 6.1%. Black unemployment also up a tenth. to 9.7%. Black women, 8.6%. Black men, though, 10.2% of black men in this economy do not have jobs. Disaggregated data is the phrase you're looking for. That's why that matters. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.